there are early indications that we could be looking at possibly a more significant wind event, but it's still too early to say for sure.
September winds kick up in South Central. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, September 2nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, NOAA reviews whether the North Pacific humpback whale still needs endangered species protection.
Whales tend to engender strong opinions from people. Some people have strong beliefs that they should be protected. Some people have different philosophies on the amount of government involvement that's needed.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
1 year after high winds caused extensive damage in Anchorage and across South Central Alaska, September is again starting off with concern about winds tonight and overnight gusts. Christian Cassell is a forecaster for the National Weather Service in Anchorage. He says winds of 45 to 60 miles per hour will pick up along higher elevations and Turnagain Arm tonight. He says gusts could reach 75.
That'll begin to pick up, especially in the next few hours towards this evening, and then last all night, and then diminish a little bit during the morning tomorrow.
Cassell says in the Anchorage Bowl, winds of 25 to 30 gusts of 40 to 50 are expected. He says gusts of 55 are possible, and weather conditions will be unsettled throughout the week.
We are looking at possibly another significant low-pressure system moving from the North Pacific northward across South Central. There are early indications that we could be looking at possibly a more significant wind event, but it's still too early to say for sure. Confidence is still pretty low at this time.
Cassell says there is no indication currently that there will be a repeat of last year when thousands of Anchorage and South Central residents were without power for days. But he says people should be vigilant.
Now that we're more confident we're going to get stronger winds, even into the bowl tonight, you know, with the leaves on the trees, I want to emphasize we're not expecting an event like last year, Labor Day, but if there are any weak trees with the rainfall and with the winds, there could be issues, isolated issues.
Trees downed by last fall's windstorm are still visible in many places across Anchorage. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration will review whether the North Pacific humpback still needs protection under the Endangered Species Act. A group of Hawaiian fishermen submitted a petition to delist the whale in April, and NOAA released its first finding late last week. KTOO's Lisa Fu has this report.
NOAA has determined the petition submitted by the Hawaii Fishermen's Alliance for Conservation and Tradition has enough substantial information to justify taking a deeper look. Humpback whales have been designated endangered since 1970. John Kurland is Assistant Regional Administrator for Protected Resources in Juneau.
Our initial review of a petition, frankly, is rather cursory. We look at the information that is in the petition itself and other information that is available in our files just to determine whether the petition presents enough information to suggest that a full analysis is appropriate. So we did that initial review, and that's the stage we're at.
What comes next is a two-step process. First, NOAA must determine if the North Pacific humpback should be considered its own distinct population.
Right now, humpbacks are listed globally. There's just one listing for all humpback whales. And so we're going to need to consider whether the humpbacks in the North Pacific meet the relevant criteria to be considered a listable entity under the Endangered Species Act. In other words, should they be treated as essentially their own species?
NOAA then decides if changing the whale's endangered status is justified. Kurland says several factors are considered.
That includes things like like whether there are any threats to the habitat or, you know, the extent or severity of threats, whether there's overutilization of a species. So if a species is harvested commercially or hunted, we have to look at the adequacy of existing regulatory mechanisms, whether there are enough rules in place to protect the species if it no longer had the protection of the Endangered Species Act.
NOAA's review will also look at the possibility of changing the whale's status from endangered to threatened. The agency has until next April to make another finding. If it's determined a change is warranted, NOAA will issue a proposed regulation, which would be open for public comment. Kurland says he's sure people will be interested.
Whales tend to engender strong opinions from people. Some people have strong beliefs that they should be protected. Some people have different philosophies on the amount of government involvement that's needed to protect wildlife. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of different opinions.
NOAA is currently requesting scientific and commercial information on humpback whales that will help the agency decide. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Today is Labor Day, set aside in both the U.S. and Canada to recognize workers. It has its roots in the labor union movement. The first Labor Day parade was in New York City on September 5, 1882. In Alaska, it was a day to collect signatures on two initiatives to protect workers. One is statewide to increase the state's minimum wage. The other asks Anchorage voters to overturn a municipal law that limits the rights of city employees. As KTOO's Rosemary Alexander reports, some union officials are concerned a nationwide decline in wages and benefits is making its way north.
If we don't do something about it, then I think Labor Day is kind of relegated to being remembered as nothing more than just the last barbecue of summer.
Vince Baltrami is president of the Alaska AFL-CIO, the state's largest labor organization. Baltrami says attacks on organized workers in some lower 48 states and the right-to-work movement is embodied in the Anchorage ordinance passed last March that eliminates city employees' right to strike, takes away incentive pay and bonuses in future contracts, and restricts annual pay increases to no more than 1% of the Anchorage cost of living. Baltrami is helping collect about 7,100 signatures of qualified voters to put the ordinance on the Anchorage ballot. Alaska has the second highest union representation in the nation, according to Baltrami, but he and other union officials are concerned it will be a target for those who want to make it a right-to-work state. A Labor Day message sent out by Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks Central Labor Councils indicates that high union participation increases Alaska's median wage for all workers by nearly $4,000. The information is gleaned from U.S. Census data. It also shows a strong correlation between union participation and education. Juneau Central Labor Council President Pete Ford says it suggests jobs in right-to-work states are usually lower income.
They also tend to be jobs that are not career-type jobs, and in many instances, they're jobs that tend to get packed up and moved away depending on what political winds might be taking place.
Right-to-work does not provide a general guarantee of employment. Instead, right-to-work states prohibit negotiated agreements between labor unions and employers that require employee membership or union dues. About half the states have right-to-work laws. Alaska unions are also helping push a statewide initiative to increase the minimum wage from $7.75 to $9.75 an hour by 2016. Then the minimum wage would be annually adjusted for inflation. Three former state Labor Department commissioners have organized the effort. Supporters have a year to collect 30,000 signatures of qualified Alaska voters to put the initiative on next year's ballot. The AFL-CIO's Beltrami says since 2009, about 70% of the jobs created in the U.S. are low wage, mostly in retail and fast food service.
Meaning that if people work full-time, they're still going to be right around the poverty level.
For a two-person household in Alaska, that's a little over $19,000 a year, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Social Services. Alaska is among 19 states in the District of Columbia where minimum wage is greater than the federal floor of $7.25 an hour. The Obama administration wants the U.S. Congress to raise the federal minimum wage to $9 an hour. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a meth bust in Dillingham.
So this is 1.5 grams, so 15 doses of heroin at $100 a piece. So if you can imagine, this item has a street value in Dillingham of over $1,500.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking ideas to improve the rural determination process. Only Alaska residents living in rural areas or communities are eligible to harvest fish and wildlife resources on federal public lands under federal subsistence regulations. The deadline to submit your ideas is November the 1st. For more information, call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
A single-engine plane crashed southeast of McGrath near Roan in the foothills of the Alaska Range on Friday. The pilot, Scott Mueller, age 58, of Big Lake, was killed. A passenger, Traeger Anderson, age 30, of Wasilla, was injured. The Super Cub reportedly crashed near an airstrip there. The National Transportation Safety Board will investigate. Saturday, they were able to reach the hillside site of another plane crash that happened Thursday near Sutton and took two lives. The two victims are identified as Adam Norton, age 30, and Derek Swanson, age 31, both of Palmer. The U.S. Attorney's Office announced indictments against four Anchorage men for drug conspiracy, kidnapping involving sexual torture, and using firearms during the crimes. The four men charged are 38-year-old Stuart T. Segiasala, also known as Tone, 33-year-old Fosavan, known as PK, 25-year-old Timothy Miller, known as Little Tone, and 25-year-old Anoy Sayalofi, known as A-Lock. The indictment alleges the men conspired to distribute more than 500 grams of methamphetamine as well as heroin, cocaine, and crack cocaine. The men are also charged with organizing home invasions of other drug traffickers to obtain drugs. The indictment alleges victims identified as A and B were held at gunpoint, bound with duct tape, and beaten for failure to pay drug debts. Further allegations state victim A was sexually assaulted with a hot curling iron, causing serious physical damage requiring hospitalization. Victim B was assaulted in a similar manner. 31-year-old Stacy F. Laulu of Anchorage was charged with violating health record privacy laws by disclosing information to Segiasala about the condition of the assault victims. Laulu is an employee of an Anchorage medical facility. The charges carry penalties from 10 years to life and possible fines in the millions of dollars. Segiasala, Miller, and Sayalofi are in federal custody. As of Friday, Hamnavan was not yet in custody. A photo of him and more information is at our website, alaskapublic.org. Last Thursday, 26-year-old Kelly Dumas of Dillingham was arrested as she left the post office with a package that authorities had been led to believe contained drugs. She was cooperative, and the package was searched later that day. Inside was black tar heroin and methamphetamine, with enough of each to indicate the illegal drugs were probably going to be sold. Meth hasn't been a common narcotic on Dillingham streets. As KDLG's Dave Benninger reports, its appearance this week has the Western Alaska Alcohol and Narcotics team concerned that the drug problem is getting worse.
When we hear about drug busts in town, it's often just after authorities have seized luggage or a package and just before they've used a search warrant to examine the contents. They've agreed to allow us access to help share a better understanding of the types and amount of drug activity happening in the region. That was the case Thursday in Dillingham.
I'm looking at a package that I seized today that was picked up by a local resident. The package contains methamphetamine, and I'm about to process it.
That's Nazrik Ney, the lead investigator for the WANT unit that covers Bristol Bay and surrounding areas. He'd been tipped off that the package in question contained the meth, but all that was visible when he first opened it was a small bundle wrapped in plastic tucked inside of a birthday card.
It's bagged in sandwich bags, one inside the other. And we'll get down to the center, unwrap the cellophane, and what we see inside of this here There's two colors to this package, and that looks awful familiar right there. It looks like black tar heroin on one side, and then methamphetamines on the other side.
Ney examined the package and its contents at the Want Evidence Locker, which is upstairs at the Public Safety Building in Dillingham. Downstairs, in the jail, 26-year-old Kelly Dumas was booked for the night, waiting for a court appearance Friday morning. Authorities say Dumas cooperated when she was arrested with the package outside the post office Thursday. Ney weighed the drugs. The meth came in at just over 3 grams, and he says he isn't sure exactly how much that's worth on the streets because there hasn't been much meth in Dillingham. The black tar heroin was cut thin and wrapped in clear saran wrap. It bore an odd resemblance to a fruit roll-up and smelled of ammonia. It weighed in at 1.5 grams.
One dose of heroin is 1/10 of a gram. So this is 1.5 grams, so 15 doses of heroin at $100 a piece. So if you can imagine, this item has a street value in Dillingham of over $1,500, and it's the size of a small potato chip.
The substances tested positive as heroin and meth, but will be sent to the crime lab in Anchorage for more analysis. Ney's concerned about finding the meth. It's a dangerous drug that he hasn't seen much of here.
No, in fact, I've been stationed in Dillingham for 7 years, and in the past 3 years, I've seized meth on 3 occasions from people here in Dillingham. Once 3 years ago, and that was a summertime cannery worker, a local resident last year, and then today is the third time from another local resident.
3 seizures in 3 years isn't a lot, nor has he heard much about meth activity. That is, until recently.
Information I've had over the past few weeks has been that meth use and trafficking is on the rise in Dillingham, and apparently this confirms that.
And the fact that the meth was found in the same package as the heroin seems to confirm his suspicion that the same crowds are using progressively worse narcotics.
Marijuana has always been around and currently is today, obviously. Oxycontin and other medication-type drugs have been abused over the past few years on the rise. It's kind of given way to heroin becoming more popular now among that same crowd. And the same crowd where I'm hearing the heroin, now I'm hearing the meth. And each drug is progressively and equally more dangerous than the next.
Investigator Ney has his hands full trying to keep on top of the illegal drug activity in the region. He says that local authorities probably seize something less than 1% of hard drugs before they get to the streets. Another trend he's concerned about is a rise in property crime, theft, and forgeries, which he believes is directly connected to drug users' need to fund their habit.
I got information today about somebody trading a boat motor for drugs.
Back to Thursday's meth and black tar heroin bust. The package was sent from a California address, which investigator Ney suspects was false, but it was posted through a California zip code. Kelly Dumas, who picked up the package at the Dillingham post office, made an appearance in court Friday. She's being charged with 2 felonies, each for possession and attempt to distribute the drugs, with a more serious charge relating to the heroin. If convicted, she could face a maximum sentence of 30 years in prison. The magistrate alluded to the danger meth and heroin present to the community when he agreed to the state prosecutor's request that Dumas be held on $15,000 bail. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
A hunting guide from Wasilla is heading to jail after being found guilty of 2 counts of big game violations by a jury in Cordova District Court. The violation stemmed from an illegal wolf hunt a year ago. KCHU's Tony Gorman has more.
Kel Trangmo was sentenced Wednesday to 60 days in jail with 50 days suspended and fined $7,000 with $3,000 suspended. He was placed on 5 years probation. Trooper spokeswoman Beth Ibsen says the violation happened during a March hunt in 2012. She says it was discovered while investigating a hunting record by Trangmo's employer, Borella's Alaskan Outfitters.
The investigating trooper noticed some inaccuracies and errors, and while looking into those errors, he discovered that the documents, the hunting that filed after the hunt, or falsified.
Ipsen says it was found that Trangmo and Barella's Alaskan Outfitters owner, Peter Barella, had conducted a wolf hunt in Cantwell, which is outside of their registered area.
These men are registered guides out of Cordova. So their area is their area to conduct guides in that area. So they were hunting in an area quite a bit ways away from their area.
Trangmo also shot and killed a wolverine in the presence of a client during that hunt as part of the sentence. He also lost the use of the rifle in connection with that hunt, had his hunting license revoked for 1 year, and can't obtain a hunting license or be in a field hunting capacity for 3 years. Barella pled guilty to the illegal hunt last month. He received a suspended 30-day jail sentence, fined $2,500 with $2,000 suspended, and had his registered guide license suspended but stayed pending a successful completion of probation. This isn't Trangmo's first run-in with the law. In 2009, he pled guilty to one count of attempted tampering with physical evidence in Glen Allen District Court in connection to an illegal Dall sheep hunt. A petition from the state to revoke Trangmo's probation is scheduled for December. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
Voters in Central Southeast will have a choice for state house in 2014. A Petersburg Republican plans to run for House District 35 in hopes of unseating a freshman Democratic representative from Sitka. Legislative districts for next year have not yet cleared a legal challenge, but at least two people intend to run for the new district that includes Sitka, Petersburg, Craig, and other communities on the northern half of Prince of Wales Island. From Petersburg, KFSK's Joe Vicnicki reports.
36-year-old Stephen Samuelson works at the grocery store Hammer and Wecon in Petersburg. He's also part of the management of the local company that offers hardware and convenience stores in town. Samuelson twice ran in the state primary against Wrangell Republican Peggy Wilson for her House seat. He narrowly lost to Wilson in his second attempt in 2010.
I ran two, I believe, very successful campaigns, though I didn't get the seat. I believe that this time I will. I think that we need quite a bit of support for Seth Stedman as from the representative side. I believe that the state is becoming more Republican all the time, but I also think we need somebody in the House that isn't voting party lines, that is seeking and really learning and understanding the district throughout what all the needs are here in our communities.
Samuelson says his top issues going into the 2014 election are some of the same ones from that last campaign. He says he's passionate about hydroelectric power for Southeast communities and service on the state ferry system. He's also noncommittal about his stance for the change in oil taxes pushed by the governor and passed by the legislature this year.
I haven't heard anything on what are we going to do next. It's I don't like it. It's not a good plan. But nobody's really come across and said, okay, this isn't a good plan, but this is another great plan on how to get more production out of the state, how to get more oil into that pipeline. And to just say, no, we don't like it. We want more money. How do we get the growth? How do we get more production? Is it tax break? Is it the governor agrees that it is? And, you know, until I'm sitting in that seat and able to provide as much information as possible to the people and get as much information as I can, we'll just have to see where that goes.
That's a big contrast with Jonathan Christ Tompkins, who Samuelson will be running against next fall, assuming that both survive the August primary.
The oil tax cut is huge, and making sure that Alaska gets a fair share of its oil wealth and isn't giving it away to BP and Exxon and Conoco, which are already, you know, making literally billions of dollars in pure profit. And nothing wrong with that, but I don't think they need any more money that could otherwise go into infrastructure and harbors and schools. So that's a huge issue. It's the reason I ran in the first place, and it's still obviously at the forefront with this referendum coming up in this upcoming legislative session.
Christ Tompkins distributed signature booklets for the referendum to repeal the tax change and says he'll be campaigning for that issue on the primary ballot next August. He turned 24 in February. Sitka Democrat won his seat in the House in 2012 by beating incumbent Republican Bill Thomas of Haines by 34 votes. He's halfway through a two-year term representing a district including Sitka, Haines, and many of the communities that could be in the new House district. Christ Tompkins says he's passionate about the job and hopes to get reelected.
It's a great platform to affect positive change. I've been working on rural issues and commercial fishing issues, education, and doing my very, very best to stop this oil tax cut, and whether that was in the legislature, also this referendum effort. And it's a great platform to work on issues that affect people's lives, and I can't think of more gratifying line of work.
Christ Tompkins does some contract work and lists public policy analyst and writer as an occupation, but says he spends much of his time representing his district, even with the legislature out of session. Christ Tompkins heads back to Juneau for the second session of the 28th Alaska Legislature this winter and says he'll focus on campaigning after that. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
The latest reality television show set in Alaska premiered on Friday. It's about welders. That's right, shipyard welders in Kodiak. Alaska Men of Steel is running on the Discovery Channel. As Jay Barrett reports from member station KMXT, the shooting took place during the notorious Kulluk grounding, but the crew was never able to get the money shot.
Kodiak's a harsh environment. Don't matter how tough you are, Mother Nature's tougher. Work ain't easy, and it sure as hell ain't safe. Hit the fan, we're the ones you want to call.
That's the tease in the first minute of Alaskan Steel Men, a new Discovery Channel offering that follows Dennis Butts, his wife Teresa, and the welders of Quality Marine of Alaska. After 4 weeks of filming this last January, the producers put together three shows to serve as a pilot. Condensing a month of work into three episodes necessitates cutting out a lot of the more routine parts of the day, but is it really as dramatic as it sounds?
Yes. Yes, it is. I mean, there's lulls in it, but at times, sometimes our customers are really, really in a bind.
Both Dennis and Teresa say that it was a fine line, accommodating the film crew while still trying to do business as usual.
The cannery people didn't really like the cameras in there, kind of in the way, because we're trying to do a repair. Then the Kulluk called, actually, and had us on standby to actually go out to the Kulluk and do some welding on the platform.
There's no way they were going to let a television crew onto the Kulluk, but there's no way we're going to say no if the Kulluk calls.
In Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Lisa Fu and Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Tony Gorman in Valdez, Joe Vicnicki in Petersburg, and Jay Barrett in Kodiak. APRN Steve Heimel reported from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Pat Yak is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. ConocoPhillips, the easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
the Salmon Project. In Alaska, salmon are food, annual traditions, and a source of jobs, businesses, and community. Information on caring for salmon habitat or your weekend catch, plus salmon love stories at salmonlove.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.